Great. This is a great opportunity for me to be able to share with you some of the ways that I work with dream images with men and women in my
practice. That truth has been inscribed into my heart and into the heart of every human being. There to be read and reverenced. Thanks be to you, O God.
I feel that many of us, or we wouldn't be here, are committed
that there are ways of seeing and sensitivities of knowing hidden deep in the palace of the soul, waiting to be discovered, ready to be set free. Thanks be to you.
And some of the conclusions and associations we've made with the metaphors
offered. Open my...
I believe that there is an increase in the energy embodied in these images that is transforming. It's transforming not only our personal lives, but also our understanding of who we are as a species and what we believe is our true spiritual identity. I think these dreams are examples of our collective shift as well as the individual's individual shift. I hope you'll be able to identify your inner journey through and with them. Although each of us, of course, is unique in our process, we know we identify with the themes and the deep heart feelings associated with dream images of others. If this weren't true, dream groups would not be the containers of transformation that we have all experienced, and I don't think we'd be here. We're being called to live into the language of the heart. As Van Morrison many years ago asked the question, can we teach the heart to think? When we're able to experience seeing through the lens of the heart, there's a light that comes through us, the light of consciousness that enables us to live relationship with others and with ourselves versus an individual, competitive, power-driven relationship. To live into that reality that we're united and interconnected on every level of our being, that you are me and I am you on a level of consciousness that our materialistic, mechanized culture has somewhat destroyed and manipulated. We're all aware of how selfish and self-serving our collective norms have become. It's all about what's mine. What can I acquire? What do I own? Who am I? Instead of, what can I offer to enable a better world for the other? How can my unique creative energy benefit the evolution of our species and our environment? How can I risk my voice to protect those without a voice? In other words, who are we? These are the questions I believe we have to ask ourselves. We also have to ask one another these questions as we're going to continue to evolve into a civilization, hopefully, of being truly human, compassionate, true beings that are created to be in relationship. Our very survival is underlying the energy that shifts and moves the psyche to release what we individually hold in the unconscious and must give life to. If we're responsible adults, we must acknowledge and bring to the light our unconscious material in order to understand and integrate it. We have to withdraw our projections and take responsibility for all of them. You've heard this from everyone who stood at this podium and offered his or her perspective on this. Anne Baring, who is an English Jungian analyst, speaks of this process from the perspective of the conscious heart-mind needing to separate from the God we have projected outside of ourselves for over 2,000 years. In letting go of this projection, we make room for a new image to emerge. We're now reclaiming these projections and struggling to discover the spiritual energy within each of us, the Christ within. When we reclaim these projections, a void is left. And when we experience that void, there's great danger of it being filled with all manner of alternative material. And we've all witnessed in the radical fundamentalist rhetoric that we're familiar with how this is happening. There's also a natural tendency towards depression that arises within us when we release our familiar projections of what we've believed have defined who we are. The father principle, the patriarchy, that which has only defined, not only defined, but controlled and sometimes abused us. There is an inherent and a natural need for nurturance, for the breast of the mother, to put it in one form, for the sacred feminine. Our inner psyche's desire to find this inner food to be comforted and protected as we grieve the loss and the abuse of what we've known under this patriarchal, untouchable, projected father principle. We're beginning to experience and become acquainted with this mother principle on many levels. It's the Sophia principle for me, and I use Sophia as the symbol of the sacred feminine associated with wisdom, the feminine face of God. Sophia is about suffering. We just heard Pittman talking about suffering. Consciousness is about suffering. There's no easy road to becoming conscious. We all have to risk being humbled, risk experiencing and taking responsibility for our personal as well as our share of the collective grief work. Pain is what breaks open the heart so that it might see, opening a space for a new image to emerge to be embraced and celebrated. There's only one coin that we're given, I believe. One side of that coin is love, the other side is grief. The deeper we invest in love, the deeper the grief. I've not only seen and heard this through many clients, I've certainly lived it in my own life. Carl Jung stated that the goal of individuation is not to make life easier, but to find meaning and purpose. We're living in a time of a wide variety of catastrophes, and it's important to realize that the original Greek meaning of the word catastrophe is turning around. We're being called to turn around. My countryman, Leonard Cohen, said, "The older I get, the surer I am, and I'm not sure who's running the show." I interpret this to mean that ego is not running the show, but rather a wiser, more conscious aspect within us and that has access to a higher wisdom. We are incredibly privileged to live in a time and a place where we can choose to live differently, to live consciously. The great challenge is that there's no easy route, no map, no shortcut, no well-defined path to follow. Each one of us must find our own path, our truth, while simultaneously being open to living with the tension of the differences between us. There are few elders and established guides for us at this conscious time. We're discovering that we're being called to be the elders and the guides, the elders of a new, uncharted territory. The work of individuation is the work of living in that spiral of emotion, of all the questions, all the experiences, all the knowledge, all the feelings, being called to hold the tension of the opposites as we identify our personal polarities, holding that tension consciously long enough until the transcendent third, the mystery, the unknown, emerges. It's never predictable. In our instant replacement change the channel society, this is a huge challenge. Dating myself, Ram Dass said in the 60s, "Be here now." This is the journey of spirit, of soul, living authentically from our deepest and most authentic selves, now, this moment. It's all we really have. Mary Oliver's poem called Dreams begins with, "All night the dark buds of dreams open richly. In the center of every petal is a letter, And you imagine if you could only remember and string them all together, they would spell the answer. It's a long night. The first dream I want to offer you is that of a middle-aged woman as she began her journey and commitment to her internal journey. The dream goes like this. I've been asked to enter some kind of a deep chamber in the church, invited to be with the elders in the basement. There's a lot of technical equipment there and many monitoring cameras and TV screens. They're all watching and seeing what is happening. It feels like the control room of a submarine. There's many books piled up as well, and there's access to many documents referring to what's happening in the world. It's like the church CIA headquarters, she said. And I also see, she explained, they're taping everybody at the pulpit. I feel young and ambivalent. The dream then shifted, and we see a compensatory feminine element here where plastic dolls that have been taking communion are being taken to a gas station. They're shoved behind a counter along with a lot of messy clothing and discarded stuff. They're ignored and uncared for. But as she said, not exactly garbage. She said, I decide to take the dolls to the Goodwill. Meanwhile, I'm trying to find the house of the man I'm attracted to, but I can't locate where he lives. Now, as we worked this dream, the following became obvious and relevant to me, particularly in the beginning, that here she's being asked to enter this deep chamber of the church. For her, as a presenting dream, it said she's now invited to enter the depths of her masculine, patriarchal, spiritual structure, father center. And there's a lot of energy there, but it's all focused on monitoring and recording whatever she is potentially called to say and do. There's lots of technical equipment. It feels like the control room of a submarine, she said. Now, a submarine is in an entirely enclosed environment that's been created to be solid and protective. It's designed and built to live beneath the surface, to live within the unconscious, referring to a linear existence that does not allow the waters of emotion to enter, but rather glides from place to place, generally undetected from the surface. The information that is there, many books, are all visual and linear in nature. They're available to her to recall and replay in her inner control room. This woman is truly, in Jungian terms, a father's daughter who has developed her thinking function highly and is extremely successful in her competitive profession in the corporate structure. She talks about referring to many documents and the church's CIA headquarters. So we're invited in this dream to see her inner unconscious center of intelligence that operates by taking in what's presented in the outside world and the authority, the pulpit, and then reviewed and recalled when needed for her to understand and respond to the world around her. Now, the very ending gives us a sense of her inner emotion, though, when she tells us, I'm young and ambivalent. It offers us that moment of emotional response. I asked her, how young do you feel? She said, well, about 22 years old. So I said, well, what happened 22 years ago? She said, oh, I was sexually abused and gang raped at that age. It was a time when I was, in my description, chubby and unattractive, lacking any self-esteem. So I decided then to become the smart one. She was able to acknowledge that this wound, this horrible event, had actually allowed the entry of spirit to open the door to begin her exploration of the subsequent effects upon her. As I said earlier, it was followed by the compensatory feminine images of plastic dolls. Now, there were three or four of them in number. As she explained, they were manufactured out of waste, not natural matter. They were all naked and very generic looking, very non-sexual. The number three is a number we often associate with the Trinity, a spiritual number of transformation. It's the two of what we have plus the new unknown. Four is associated with the quadrant of wholeness and completeness. She wasn't sure which she had here. They're taking communion, ingesting the sacred and partaking of the transfiguration. Healing and wholeness is offered to that which has been manufactured out of what is not natural. The gas station. Again, like the submarine, a rather phallic image in part, is a place that provides fuel, the gas she needs, a masculine place of refilling that which has the potential for regenerating her energy. All of these are shoved behind the counter with messy clothing and discarded stuff. They're placed on the other side of the threshold, the stuff that is not out front and visible. It's ignored and allowed to remain in a messy and undifferentiated persona, stuffed away. However, she decides in the dream to take these manufactured images of the feminine. Her conscious ego, that which she knows and thinks of herself, makes a choice to take these aspects of her manufactured self to a place of goodwill, a place of recycling and gifting to those in need. Her conscious feminine ego is searching for her animus, her new way of thinking and doing she's attracted to. But she can't quite find where he lives in her. I offered her an opportunity to go deeper with one of these images, offering Bob Haas's six magic questions, one of my favorite tools. She said, the naked plastic doll. This is what she said exactly. I am an empty shell, cold and abandoned. My purpose is to wake up mommy. I like that I don't have to deal with anything. I can be unconscious, but I dislike that I'm cold, alone, and not real. I fear I will never find Daddy. My greatest desire is to be born and to be real. We see here how vulnerable and young her psyche is. Her container is fragile. How in need of nourishment, love, and parenting. How separate and abandoned she feels despite her extraordinarily well-developed, successful persona mask in the waking corporate world. Now, from a man's unconscious, and I need to say this is a man who has committed to his inner world for a number of years. He's diligent and disciplined in not only recording his dreams, but in working them. He's very skilled in accessing his intellect, He's a retired professional. At the beginning of this session, he said to me, summarizing a series of dreams, "There seems to be a common thread of emotional energy in most of my dreams lately, a feeling of an attraction. There's an engagement of some sort in all of them." The first dream he offered, he titled, "She's Dead." It was an incredibly powerful image, as you will hear. He goes on to explain, "I'm witnessing a black woman sitting in the back of an open pickup truck. She is shot dead as I watch. I see a group of young black men gathered nearby, directly opposite a group of white men of the same age. They're facing one another and there's no dialogue, yet I feel the incredible tension between the two groups." He then went on to say, "I see this woman as the black Madonna that's being killed off in the patriarchy. It's my unconscious, also my redneck, masculine way of understanding that refuses to dialogue. She represents for me the body, the deep feminine energy of being in her body on the earth. I'm aware of my detachment from my body. She is his inner black Madonna, that is patriarchal, linear, logical self, that's focused and driven, that has worked well in the world, has shot and killed off, murdered as she sat open and vulnerable, just waiting for him to make contact with. The stark confrontation of the black and the white choices and ways of thinking helped him to see his polarity thinking and being in the world at that time. It was followed by a compensatory dream called the long, dark stubble on my neck. The dream was as follows. I look in a mirror and I see that I have long dark stubble down my neck. I conclude that my shaving was focused on my face and that I didn't notice that I had this unattractive stubble growing. I'm with or expected to be with someone shortly and I'm very self-conscious about my appearance. Looking in a mirror, mirrors in the dream are symbols of soul that reflect back to us our image as we see ourselves, except in the reverse, yet quite perfect. He sees the true natural growth of his instinctual masculine self that he'd missed while focusing only on the face of himself. Conscious ego self here is very uncomfortable with the changes he sees, and he explains with, quote unquote, the imperfect image before me. He then goes on to say, "I would see this man as one living on the fringe, not part of the in crowd or the club, one not plugged in, someone to be watched, someone I'd keep an eye on. He's potentially dangerous because of his lack of concern regarding his image in the patriarchal collective." And then there was a pause, and he goes on to say, "But you know what? He could also be a man who lives on the street, living in an authentic, raw, possibly true life of himself that's not influenced by the collective norms of the socially acceptable." That seemed to give him a little more energy. "So again," I said, "would you like to do the six magic questions?" He said, "I would. I want to be the dark stubble." Okay, here's what he said. "My purpose is to grow out from my physical body. I like that I get to discover who I am, feel the sun and the breeze, and be seen for who I am in the world and by the world. I don't like that black is often associated with dark, bad, and evil. I fear the disapproval I may bring on my host. And I fear being cut off at my source, while my greatest desire is to intertwine with other stubble and growth and create a nest in which birds can live, thus creating an organic space. Wow. Right? We then went on to explore that all of this was taking place on his neck, the fifth chakra, the place of finding his true voice, his I am. It's important to remember that the dysfunctional element of the fifth chakra is the silent child, while the creative positive is the communicator. The tension within this polarity is focused on as his conscious self becomes aware of and identifies with both of the extremes, with his polarities here. Now, sometime later, he presented me with another dream that shows us he's well on the way. This dream is called "The Old Man is Dead." He says, "I woke up to hear a voice saying, 'The old man is dead.' And I remembered that the dream that preceded it went like this. I need a dress shirt and a suit for a particular function. I say to somebody, I'm not sure who, I need to buy new clothes because the old ones are too big for me. I go to a store in a mall and discover racks of clothing that I think look good, but while I'm looking at them, I realize I don't know what size I need anymore. I plan to ask my friend, the salesman, to measure my neck size with a tape measure. The old man is dead, the old clothes, the old familiar persona doesn't fit. He has to exchange energy or money for a new persona, a new image. Ego's not sure what the new size is and has to discover what the dimension, the circumference, the diameter of his fifth chakra, his voice, his I am, really is now the vehicle of his own voice and self. The dream then shifts for him to meeting a group of men for a game of golf at a golf community where there's a number of established structures, as he said, on a very well manicured ground. It's a nice place to live, he thought, as he rode around on his golf cart. Now the cart, if we think of it as an image and a symbol, it's designed energy source of individual energy. We get to drive it ourselves. And it's his ego's way within the playing field of the in crowd or the in club. It's a low-key energy. It's not a Maserati here. But it's very effective for the environment because it doesn't need a concrete path. He says, I came to an area where the landscaping looks natural, almost prairie-like, with tall uncut grass and occasional roped-off areas requiring a number of U-turns before I arrive at an amazing picnic under the sun where I see a beautiful woman that I don't know, but I'm very attracted to and I want to meet. In his intentionally designed inner environment, this very well-structured, linear in-club place within himself, there is the presence of the feminine free-form growth of the wild, tall grass. There's also a few barriers in place. And they're a surprise to him. Although he admits, when we talk about them, they might be boundaries or markers created for his own safety that he needs to turn around and make U-turns from. He's seeing here his need to find alternative paths to the informal gathering that is already taking place, where his shadow energies at the picnic are sharing a basic but open, friendly nourishment. It's here he discovers a new feminine anima, a new muse, and is immediately attracted to her. He has access, he knows now, to his emotions and his body if he can only meet up with her. His summary of all of this was as follows. The old man is dead. The old clothes and persona don't fit. I have a sense lately of seeing differently, of being a different person in some way. I'm on a path where I encounter some dead ends, requiring me to find alternative approaches, but I'm doing what feels comfortable. I'm not really spending a lot of energy trying to figure it all out and control every detail. I'm just getting on with it. The dream seems to be telling us he's changing, still on his path, no longer a concrete linear one, searching for that less formal collective gathering within himself of nourishment, where he's offered an opportunity to meet the new muse, a new creative feminine potential energy within himself. He concludes, I'm curious about the encounter with my new anima, and I'm looking forward to spending time allowing her to creatively find expression through me. The final dream I want to offer you is a dream of my own that I had several years ago. For me, it's been a dream of encouragement and affirmation in my lifelong journey of trying to accept my true self. Obviously, this does not mean I've become enlightened or done all of my inner work. It was merely an important dream for me that marked a definitive shift in my perception of self. In the dream, I'm walking through a labyrinth of passageways in an ancient wooden cathedral. I've been called here to tell my story along with a woman who is a relative of mine, in my perception, an intellectual, always threatening to me, unlike my intuitive self. I feel shy and insecure as I enter an open, high-ceilinged, well-lit area which seems to somehow be the center of this cathedral. There's a large round table in the middle where this woman is seated with a man dressed in a black suit and a hat. I recognize him as a Hasidic rabbi, and it is his job to facilitate the story. The woman is then gently invited by the rabbi to go home. So she quietly stands without a word and departs. I'm then taken by the rabbi to a small chapel and told I can sit in the front pew while my long robe that I seem to suddenly be wearing is draped over several of the pews lined up behind me. I sit down slowly and realize and recognize that hanging directly in front of me is an ancient, beautiful tapestry. And I recognize this tapestry as the Virgin and the Unicorn. I then realize I can't tell my story to this wall and tapestry that merely is inanimate, yet it has great meaning for me when I work with it. And I say this to the rabbi. So he says, come with me. We leave the long train behind, and he leads me back to the round table, where he gently places a beautiful, brilliant, royal blue lace, Irish lace, shawl over my head and shoulders. It's made of the finest thread, and I feel humbled. He asks me then, "Are you ready?" And I say, "Yes." This dream continues to touch my soul and my heart every time I remember it. It is the acceptance for me of my mystical, Kabbalistic animus that hears my story and honors me with the mantle of my sacred feminine. I was set free in that dream of my neurotic obsession of not being academic enough. Knowing I had said yes to my true self. I'm reminded when Pittman was talking about going home. For me, E.T. was the movie that captured going home. Phone home, E.T., phone home. It touched my heart deeply and I think speaks to that home of soul within us collectively. Anne Baring frequently refers to a dream that she had many, many years ago, which embodies a call to become aware, both personally and collectively, to say yes. The dream is this. I'm walking in the wilderness when I hear a voice calling out, "Help me, help me." And I look around, I don't see anybody. But I look down as I sense it seems to be coming from my feet, this sound, and I see a tiny purse, which I pick up. When I open the tiny purse, there's an even tinier little stone. And the stone is calling out, "Help me, help me." She says to herself, "Is this possible?" And then she said, "Yes." She goes on to explain that what is calling to us is what we've considered ignorant, unreal, and inanimate. We must be willing to let go of all the barriers, all the established pre-existing perspectives of the past within our individual selves and within our collective perspective, to enable the new, the creative embodiment to emerge into reality. As we witnessed in the basement of the patriarchal institution of God's center of intelligence, in the unnatural composition of the feminine taking communion that is now being taken to a place of goodwill, in the violent death of the innocent Black Madonna, in the release of the projected academic shadow feminine, and in the pronouncement that the old man is dead, there is a death that's being called out within individual psyches that reflects our collective journey. It's time for a new persona. It's time to acknowledge that we have a choice of how we want to live, of how our environment and our energy can be used in the conscious spirit of compassion, love, and unity. When Richard Rohr spoke about God awareness, he quoted 1 Corinthians 15:28. "Once I can see the mystery here and trust the mystery even in this piece of clay that I am, in this moment of time that I am, then I can also see it in you, and eventually in all things." That would be full enlightenment when God is all in all. The change we're called to is huge. It's a hologram that contains the spiritual, emotional, physical, psychological, and behavioral. All of these elements are being addressed, not simultaneously, that would be easy, but rather individually within each of our souls and our soul journeys through our dreams, I believe. Remember that Jung said every night a Eucharist? All the information we need is in the quantum field, as our friend Doug Bennett reminds us. We live in this field of consciousness. We need only open ourselves to the infinite, imaginative, unexplored potential that's the very substance that holds our molecular structures in place. It's what is between the molecules. It's waiting for us to claim it, to integrate it into our personal and unique expression while trusting and acknowledging its collective power to unite. Moses Cordovero, a 16th century philosopher, said, "The essence of divinity is found in every single thing." This is not a new concept. Our greatest challenge here is to learn to reach out in an affirmative, mature, responsible way. Instead of waiting to be taken care of as children wait to be reached out to. Years ago at a conference, Harvel Hendricks was speaking to us who we were all delving into our inner child work. He said, "You know, we have enough children. We need more adults in the world to care for them." I've never forgotten that. May we all live into the day with an awareness that we are one element in an endless array of life, that everything our eyes falls upon lives and breathes and is interconnected with our soul. May we take responsibility for reaching out, to risk reaching out. I'd like to read to you a poem that will be followed by a piece of music that is from the Quran. The music written by Linda Larkin, and this will be performed by Fran McKendry and his band from the Advent Conference with John Philip Newell in December. The poem is called "Sweet Darkness" by David White. When your eyes are tired, the world is tired too. When your vision is gone, no part of the world can find you. Time to go into the dark, where the night has eyes to recognize its own. There you can be sure you are not beyond love. The dark will be your womb tonight. The night will give you a horizon further than you can see. You must learn one thing. The world was made to be free in. Give up all the other worlds except the one to which you belong. Sometimes it takes darkness and the sweet confinement of your aloneness to learn anything or anyone that does not bring you alive is too small for you. Sometimes it takes darkness and the sweet confinement of your aloneness to learn anything or anyone that does not bring you alive is too small for you.
whichever way you turn, whichever way.
The face of